We are here today with Dr. Michael Finkelstein, the Skillful Doctor. How are you today, Doctor?
I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent. I've heard you say that over the past several centuries, our society has really gradually drifted away from and then basically totally abandoned a way of living that's supported by nature's rhythms. We eat, for example, when we should be digesting, and we speed up when we should be slowing down, we spend when we should be saving, and perhaps the most significant, noticeable, potentially egregious flouting of natural cycles is our ignorance of the circadian rhythm. In short, we're too often awake when we should be sleeping, and when we do sleep, it's irregular or restless or not enough or too much. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Why is it so important, and what's the problem with that?
Well, I think most of us feel out of sync, out of rhythm. And as a result, it affects all of our systems, perhaps most notably just how much energy we have on any given day. But in addition, whether we're susceptible to colds and other viruses, whether we feel more achy and inflamed, our general mood, all of these things are, are feedback to us that something's out of sync, something's out of rhythm.
So people should really be sleeping easily, falling asleep easily and sleeping soundly. That is a sign of good health.
Well, I think that you hit the key word, which is sleep. So if people say, well, I sort of feel okay and my energy's all right, I'm used to this, the best barometer, if you will, of whether or not you're really in that rhythm that I talk about when I speak of skillful living and extraordinary health, when I talk about that state of being, sleep is your best barometer. How you feel when you wake up in the morning. Are you well rested? Do you feel energetic? Are you ready to go? And to look back even over the night and how restless or peaceful was the night while you were sleeping. And so many people come to me complaining of sleep. I can't tell you. And it means to me, sort of, and it got me thinking and writing what you read at the beginning, which was, in our culture, we've just drifted away from this natural rhythm.
Is everything asleep when you're asleep? In other words, on a cellular level, is everything sleeping and resting, your brain and even like little cells in your big toe? Or is it just kind of general sleep?
No, that's why it's so important, because when you sleep, it allows your body to do, and your mind, and other parts of you, even your sort of energetic state, to refresh, to restore. It's the time when the cells of your body unload their toxins, the debris, the garbage that accumulates during the day, because when you're eating and assimilating nutrients, when your brain is assimilating information, you're forced to process that. But when you're at a state of relative rest where you're not ingesting, and that could be either literally food or figuratively information, those cells have an opportunity now to, sort of unload. It's like what happens, in the department store at night after it closes up and everyone goes to sleep. All these men and women come out to straighten up, to clean, to reorganize. That's what goes on in every cell of your body.
Right. Without getting too scientific, tell me a little bit about the sun and sleep. I know people fear a little bit too much getting the sun. There's kind of a media frenzy out there about getting too much sun. I know when we were both kids, parents used to love for us to get out there in the sun, and then all of a sudden there was this great fear of the sun. But people, I guess, get a sense intuitively that somehow the sun is attached or connected somehow with sleep. How is that connected? How is the sun connect to the brain, and how does that connect somehow with getting good rest at night?
Well, I think that the simple answer is that in our brain there's a gland called the pineal gland. It's the size of an olive. And it sits right behind our eyes. And it could actually sense light, sunlight in particular. It actually sensed light from other things like our computer screens. However, and this is that'll be an important point that I'll come back to later, but the pineal gland is aware when it's light out and when it gets dark. And when it's dark, it releases melatonin, which is familiar to many people as a supplement. It's a neurotransmitter, but it's a supplement that can help you sleep. And so our body produces melatonin naturally. But it requires the contrast of a bright day and hours of daylight and darkness in the evening. And so when we don't do that, and we can mess that up in a number of ways, like not getting outside. So during the day, we're inside with dim lights, and the contrast between day and night is not so great. Or at night, as many of us do, we're sitting in front of screens that are LCD or plasma or whatever, emitting intense light directly into our eyes because we're staring at it, and tripping us up thinking that it's still daylight. And so we mismanage our natural system, and as a result, we suffer for it because we don't fall asleep so easily and we don't sleep as restfully. In the morning when the sun comes up, you know, again, even with your eyes closed, you know you can tell when there's sunlight outside. So the brain kicks back on, and your body then wakes up. If we don't really pay attention to that, and if we don't allow ourselves to sleep in total darkness and be mindful of how much light and when we're getting light during the day, we don't take advantage of this inherent system, which is so brilliant.
So it sounds like people who are working the night shift, which includes millions of Americans, might have a bit of a problem with this.
And they clearly do. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that these people are, you know, suffer from a higher incidence of all the diseases that people get, you know, and because it is stressful, and it does mess them up. When I was a resident working in a hospital, you know, and I was on call and up all night, nobody needed to remind me that I was a mess, that my energy was different, that my temperament was different, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, just from personal experience, but I think we've all had these overnight, you know, overnight experiences where you know how we feel the next day. Imagine if that's chronic.
Right. There's a little paradox there about how doctors are people who don't necessarily get to take care of themselves because they're so busy taking care of everybody else. Vitamin D, of course, is something that the sun helps with. Physiologically, the sun helps convert vitamin D to its active form, and that helps the bones stay strong, and it helps your immune system fight cancer and other diseases. So it's a good idea to get some sun in your skin then, so we don't have to be so afraid of it. And, of course, it helps to expose your eyes a little bit to the sun during the early part of the day. So, in other words, take off your UV blockers, get a little bit of sun. That helps release the melatonin, and it'll help you fall asleep at night. So get a little bit, right? Not too much, but a little bit at least.
Well, I think, you know, as a simple rule, daily, get outside daily, and at least keep your eyes open, you know, and that means maybe remove your sunglasses. And, yes, I mean, I even think, you know, sun, you know, is, you know, our mortal enemy number one, you know, in terms of the way dermatologists are talking about it. But the fact is, while skin cancer is a concern, an hour of sunlight a day, even on your skin, is beneficial. To take the recommendation to its extreme and to never get sun is to, you know, miss the point altogether.
Right. It seems like people in the Northern Hemisphere tend to get more chronic diseases like diabetes and so forth, and they do tend to get problems like lack of vitamin D, et cetera, those related diseases and immune system problems more than people who have more sun, correct?
Yeah, I think that that's true. I think this reflects then the comments at the very beginning, that this is a matter of balance and rhythm. And, you know, it's not just northern latitudes or extreme southern latitudes, it's sort of this western culture, you know, which happen to reside in those places largely, where, you know, we are running around all the time, that we have the means to stay up and watch and entertain ourselves and shop, and we don't go to bed when we should be going to bed, and we're spending money and time when we should be in stillness. We're connected to people via, you know, sort of electrotransmitters, but we're not necessarily touching people the same, and there's a whole different feel to living and a different vibration, and that's having its effects, and we see it in terms of the rising incidence of all those diseases.
Boy, I mean, the electric light seemed like a brilliant invention, but you're saying it kind of short-circuited nature here and caused us to stay up so late. It screwed up the natural rhythm of things where we woke up with the sun and went to sleep when the sun went down, kind of messed with our system.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm very happy to have lights and heat in the winter, and I enjoy my ability to communicate with my son, you know, 1,500 miles away. But the notion is, again, about balance. I mean, we can take advantage of some of these amazing technologies and yet also understand how important it is to stay in balance, which means to unplug enough of the day. And that ultimately, like, when do you do that? So when you sleep, conceivably, that is the time when you're naturally going to be unplugged. But A lot of people sleep with the music on. A lot of people sleep with the TV on. A lot of people sleep with lights and, you know, stay up late because they got to watch that show and they wake up early to go to work, and they're really chasing their tails in the end, because with all that input, which is, might be good for the moment, they're winding up with hardships, pain, diseases, other experiences, broken relationships as a result of poor quality sleep.
Yeah, that's what the DVR is for. Program that stuff and watch it when you can. Watch it to relax.
And I think the news, just as an aside, should not be watched at night. So there are things that go on in the evening as well in terms of sleep hygiene, I would call it, you know, a way to facilitate great sleep. So there's this mindful awareness of the sun and the solar cycle and, you know, just trying to get to bed at a reasonable hour. But what we do in the evening before we decide to go to sleep will have great impact as well. So if we're watching a show where, you know, people are killing each other or running around chasing each other, you know, in a frenzy state, or watching the news where those real things are happening in our real world, we cannot be settled. You know, when people raise children, infants, they know that they got to spend an hour or two before they go to bed slowing them down. Warm bath,
right.
Warm bottle, cuddling. You start reading to toddlers, you know, in a low, quiet voice. You start dimming the lights. You know, we're adults, and we're maybe we don't need quite so much coddling, but we need a lot of the same adjustment in rhythm, noise, and excitement before we go to bed. Otherwise, we're no different. You know, we're babies, in fact, fall asleep much easier. Think about it. They're sleeping, you know, an infant will sleep 20 hours for the first 2 weeks of its life, has no problem sleeping, even with the light. But as we get older, we have problems sleeping. So we need to be very mindful of those things.
Well, hasn't science come up with a perfect solution to that? 43% of adults use a sleep aid several times a week. So doesn't that work? Just shuts your brain off with chemicals. The miracle of modern science.
Well, I think a couple of hundred years from now, maybe not even that long, they're going to look back at this period of time in Western culture with the advent of medicines, you know, pharmaceuticals, and they're going to be laughing. They're going to say, you know, those guys thought that they, and girls, but a lot of guys in the medical establishment leading it, are thinking that they're going to, you know, sort of somehow help people. Of course, they're profiting. And we know that they're going to become addicted and reliant on these products. And in the end, it's really not going to help them. But we're going to profit, and we're going to have a nicer car. That is an indictment of our society that, and I feel, has to be discussed and revealed. But individuals, more important than that, have to take responsibility for themselves. They just can't give in to that, even though it's so tempting. You have to take care of yourself. You can't just let society, you know, lead you off the cliff. That's what they're going to laugh about. Look at all these people, you know, just, you know, mindlessly following as opposed to taking control of their own lives, which means shutting the lights off at 9 o'clock and taking a bath and reading a nice book and telling nice stories and just taking it easy at night and feeling really well rested tomorrow so that you feel fully alive and fully into your day and have great relationships and are productive at work and then have luxury that way as opposed to the quick fixes that modern medicines are offering.
Right. I think there's great wisdom in that question for all of us. Are you taking care of yourself? What is the reason that the stress is so great or the anxiety is so great that you need some sort of chemical to go to sleep when the body is naturally programmed to do that every night?
Yeah.
And speaking of drugs, go ahead.
I was going to say, Ian, that there are times when medicines are really useful. You know, there are times that people have to sleep tonight because, and they have to function tomorrow because they're going to their father's funeral. You know, I've written prescriptions for that reason. There are times to be truly compassionate, empathetic, and make use of the technology. But as a chronic sleep aid, that's not a good recommendation. I don't think it's a good medical practice because in the end, these things don't work chronically. I think as a rule, take a medication that works in a week. Don't take a medication that's, you know, requires a lifetime of investment without considering what other things you can do for yourself.
Right. Along those same lines, there's some connection between poor sleep and depression, isn't there? Maybe that connection might have something to do with serotonin. But what is the connection between sleep, depression, SSRIs, et cetera?
Well, you know, so serotonin is another neurotransmitter that connects brain cells to each other, and it's part of how our brain chemistry functions and we stay in balance from a brain physiological point of view. Melatonin, serotonin, you know, these are all words that sound a lot alike for reasons, that they're related compounds, and they share the same loops, where they're feedback loops. And, you know, the question of depression and sleep is interesting. It could be a chicken and egg phenomena too. But what's important really is not necessary to drill down so deeply scientifically, because where's that going to lead you? To a better medication? I think the idea here is to go the other direction. Take the higher view. How can one restore the balance to really appreciate what you can do, where you really can influence, so that you can make the best of these processes that are very intricate, that are very tightly connected, and do the best? There are foods that can be supportive. There is water. There are ways to cleanse your body and mind. And these are not just physiological. There's a psycho-spiritual component to all of this. All these things are related. The issue of depression and sleep they're sisters. You know, they're connected. And to think that you can fix one without addressing the other is not necessarily the ideal train of thought. To me, what the common denominator between them is the rhythms and cycles, a meaningful life, purpose, something we can talk perhaps today or at least at another time, because you got to know why you want to wake up. You have to know why you want to live. Occasionally, just to put the usual caveat in, depression is endogenous, meaning there is something really wrong. There's some physiological, chemical imbalance that's genetic or truly biological, purely biological. But I will tell you, I believe that's very rare. I think that's very rare. I think it occurs. If you want to believe that's what you have, and therefore you wed yourself to medicines as the only approach, I don't want to be a judge ever. That's people's choice. However, I think that the wiser approach is to assume it's not just biological, that there's something that we can do to influence it. And then it gets back to the same prescription, balance, observing the cycles and rhythms of nature.
Well, I think all this could be hugely helpful. We have lots of studies out there that show an association between disruption of circadian rhythms and an increased risk of all kinds of diseases, including cancer. There were studies by the Agency for Research on Cancer that showed healthy circadian rhythms, which played a critical role in cell cycles, DNA damage response, and tumor suppression. And besides the things we talked about, like depression, good sleep helps with diabetes, helps with cancer prevention, helps with preventing the risk of obesity, cardiovascular disease, and other serious chronic conditions. So we definitely want to help people hit the pillows. In the last few minutes here, I'm wondering, Doctor, if you could help us again, help lay out for people what they can do exactly at night to make sure they're getting the best sleep possible. There are a few things you talked about, but I'm hoping you can help in maybe a minute or two, help people lay out a plan for what exactly they can do at night to make sure they can get the best sleep possible. So you talked about a few things like making sure it's perfectly dark, but what else can they do? What can they do throughout the day to prepare for it too?
Well, so here, I'll start with the night, but then I want to just put in first, and I'll add that at the end, that it's what you do during the entire day that's going to matter how you sleep tonight. So, but in the evening, which is clearly important, there is the sleep hygiene that I spoke of. Let's assume you eat dinner somewhere around 6 or 7 o'clock, which would be a wise choice. Eating later is not such a great idea. The later you eat, the less comfortable you're going to rest at night. I think almost everyone has that experience. So think about eating no later than 7 o'clock. And dinner shouldn't be the largest meal of your day, because the more you eat, the less well you're going to sleep. So if you're really having struggle right now with sleep, then I would just eat less at night, especially. After dinner, it would be good to move a little bit, because your digestion really does benefit from a little bit of movement, like a walk. That's what I mean. So take a walk around your house or your block or the apartment building you live in, or just go up and down the stairs. No, probably not, but something level, something easy, just for 10 minutes, just to breathe, to move things around, to stay upright. Certainly lying down is not a good idea then. Let's say that gets you to 7:30, 8 o'clock. And let's say your target to go to bed is 10:30, which I would say is another reasonable choice. You got 2.5 hours. What are you going to do in that 2.5 hours? Again, I would avoid stimulants. That includes any food or beverage like coffee or even caffeinated tea or sodas that are caffeinated. I would avoid those at night. I would avoid sweet foods. Again, sugar in excess, and that would include a second apple even, is going to be stimulating. I would start slowing down. I would start dimming the lights. You could take a hot bath if you have one, or just relaxing, breathing, reading a nice, quiet novel, avoiding television and bright lights. And when you go to sleep, shut the lights off so it's nearly black. The only excuse you have to put a little light on, like in your bathroom, is so you don't trip on the floor. But the better thing to do is clear the floor so there is nothing to trip on and make it black. Put shades on your windows and get to bed. If you're a little uncomfortable physically, I would do a little light stretching and moving so to see if you can help yourself. Add an extra pillow or two to your bed so that you have ways to prop up your limbs, and sometimes that helps you sleep more comfortably. That's how I would think about the evening. I would say during the day, though, realize that if you don't get sunlight, that contrast between the day and the night is not going to help you quite as much. So get outside every day. And then you have to think about caffeine. Even though people talk often about I don't drink coffee at night, coffee during the day and in the morning, and I'm using coffee as a prototype caffeinated beverage, but any caffeinated beverage, caffeine functions like a drug in our system, one that our cells get used to. And even if you have caffeine just once a day in the morning, hours later you start to withdraw. The withdrawal phenomena, physiologically, is a stimulant. There's a stimulating state. And so by nighttime, with your one cup of coffee at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're still withdrawing from caffeine and then being subtly stimulated. I would just suggest, I know people hate this recommendation, just to see for yourself. If you taper yourself off of caffeinated beverages for a couple of weeks and do what I say, see how you sleep, see how you feel in the morning, see how your work is, see how your relationships are, see how your mood is, see how clear your mind is. And you judge for yourself rather than any proof or any scientific study. Judge for yourself if that's worth it, if that's worth having coffee maybe just for on Sundays as opposed to every day. It's not an easy choice, and that's just from a coffee point of view, but all these other things that I mentioned are no-brainers, don't cost anything, probably will save you money because you don't have to buy entertainment at night like that crazy movie or the next video game that's, you know, people shooting at each other with loud noise. I think, you know, those are important things. In addition, just one last thing, do not make a phone call with somebody that's going to aggravate you at night if you can avoid it, because any form of aggravation, listening to newscasters and people who are hyperventilating on TV about, you know, their pet peeve is stimulating. And understand that we're human. We're affected by all of this. And so if your goal is to sleep better, and you appreciate what I'm saying, which is that when you sleep better, you're going to be not only feeling better, but you're going to have a lower incidence of all the diseases you don't want to have. If that's your goal, then this is the way you begin on that path.
Well, that was all fantastic advice. Adequate sleep allows your body's physiologic process on a cellular level to really work optimally. That can really reduce inflammation and all kinds of other problems. Addressing this kind of problem, sleep deprivation alone, might be the single most important step toward the health that's been eluding you. This is a really important question you can ask yourself that Dr. Finkelstein asks us. Are you taking care of yourself? You don't need the government. You don't need a PhD. You don't need a million studies. You don't need $1 million to ask that question. Just your own intuition. That simple question, are you taking care of yourself, is enough. We thank you so much, Dr. Finkelstein, for your time today. We'll see you on the next podcast, and we'll see you too, folks. Thank you very much. It was very eye-opening. We hope it will be eye-closing, too.
Thank you, Ian. That was wonderful. Have a great night's sleep.